Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is July 22?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, 22. I got it right. Hey.
Yes, definitely the 22nd. Happy anniversary to my old lady.
Oh, shit. It's today's anniversary?
Yeah, happy anniversary, guys.
Yeah, 15 years married.
15 joints.
24 joints. Yeah. Yeah.
Ivy's like, yeah, word up.
Ivy's showing love.
Ivy is having a day.
Yeah, Ivy's having a good time.
Yeah, we have also, in addition to Inca, who y'all can already hear is here, we also have Ivy as a special correspondent
popping through, because she got some things she would get off her chest.
She wanted.
Ivy been watching TV too.
We're gonna go with this Nickelodeon joints. What I'm saying. I got some shit to talk about. Now, congratulations, but for those who don't, I never mentioned it before, but I was at the wedding. It was a grand affair, and it was a new.
Well, I was at the renewal, which I can't believe was 5 years ago already.
Crazy.
That is crazy. But we had a good old time.
Yeah,
we did a second line
in New Orleans.
And I'm still thinking about. So Sean and Mona did a dinner. We did a second line down to a dock, and then they did this dinner on a steamboat. And I'm still thinking about that fried chicken from that dinner. Mm. And me and Lauren, country cousin, the fried chicken was so good. And me and Lauren, country cousin, were sitting with Miss Deb, with Deb Antony, Waka's mom.
That must have been a blast.
And so she had just lost a bunch of weight at that point. And me and Lauren talked about this chicken so much that she was like, y'all bitches are really, literally, she was like, y'all bitches are really sitting here talking about this chicken. And we were like, Miss Deb, that chicken is so good. Like, it really tasted like somebody's grandmama was back there shaking it in a paper bag.
It probably was.
Flour, and really, for real, frying it. And one of them big old cat. Ooh, that chicken. I'm still thinking. If I would call Lauren right now and say, remember that chicken?
Y'all go for an hour.
What? An hour. Easy. Yeah. Easy. It was that good. So shout out to Sean and Mona for that.
Congratulations to the young for being a pillar of black love in our community. Something that we need. I ain't trying to put that much heat on them. Now, ain't nobody shit perfect. But they work hard. They stay together. They work through their thing. And they're a good example of what you need to do to keep this thing going. That's all I'm saying.
You are so right. No, but I will say, Sean, you know, you talk about your family in broad terms here. Obviously, we don't like to get too much in your business, yeah, but you guys are a great example of how a partnership can work in what mm-hmm. some may consider unconventional terms.
And personal, and they combine business and all that.
Yeah. So, as we often say, shout out to Mona Me Entertainment.
Exactly. Peace to Mona Me Entertainment.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get this thing started. Inca gun jumping. Wait, I guess, no. Before we do that, just because Inca reminded us that something's on here. Shout outs. Yes. Yeah, we don't really do shout outs that much anymore because
we ain't seen nobody.
I ain't seen nobody put the niggas up. Well, I got a quick one, but like, also because we know sometimes the shout outs take a bit of time and they would cut into the actual show. This is why we cut shout outs out. But
was it?
It kind of what it was. It was
we
would go
that.
Sometime 10, 15 minutes and it'd be like before we get started. But anyway, anybody got a quick shout out? Inca, do you have a quick shout out? Because I know you like that part of the show.
I always got a shout out.
Okay, who you got a shout out?
Shout out.
Besides Ivy, obviously.
To Ivy, who's having the worst day of her life, apparently. shout out to all the white people on the internet who are getting their ass whooped for not wearing masks, for being racist in grocery stores.
Yes.
Shout out to all of them. I hope that your reckoning comes with some learning for you and that you feel better afterward. Because I certainly feel better watching it.
It unfortunately won't, because white people think inconvenience is oppression. But but yes, shout out to them.
Yeah.
I had a shout out, and I do not remember what it was. So if it comes to me later, as I was getting ready to open the Zoom, I was like, I had a shout out, and I literally do not remember what it was anymore. So if it comes to me later, I'll bring it back up.
But bro, you got something, but you did, besides obviously your wife today, you got any others?
No, I ain't really got no shout outs. Because again, we ain't seen
somebody. Somebody got to take a drink now. Somebody got to take a drink right now.
Somebody got to take a drink. And Sean, I have no damn shout out.
Yes.
All right. So I got a couple quick ones. So shout out to my shout out to my homeboy Chris Atlas, who's got a big promotion over at Warner Brothers. He's an EVP now.
I saw that news.
Yeah, yeah. So peace to him. I'm actually going up to his crib in Vermont tomorrow for the weekend to hang out with him for his birthday. Shout out to my doctor who gave me a steroid because my gout.
Because the gout done flared up. Now, what did you eat this time, Jeffrey?
Jumping in the house, eating.
No, it wasn't even that. I was out. It wasn't even that. And I don't be wilding out. I did some dumb shit. I went over to this Mexican restaurant last week and had some rice, but unbeknownst to me, the rice had shrimp in it. It was a paella or something. No. I was eating off somebody's plate. I was eating off my girl's plate.
See, that's what you get for eating off your girl's plate.
Nigga, shit. She's like, taste this. It's good. And I'm like, poo poo. And then, you know, because it had shrimp around it, but I didn't think they had shrimp in it too. With my dumb ass.
Because
I'm very diligent. Like, if I even see some seafood, I'm like, nah.
Right.
You know, like, but I was, you know, I think I had a shot of tequila. I was a little loose. And so the gout then popped up again. It's been killing me. So,
Damn. Yeah,
it's been hurting bad. Hurt me bad. Have me down. So
now, when that happens, because I don't think I've ever actually seen the gout. Is it like, does your foot swell up?
Yeah, my foot
is it like up. Big mommy your foot? Like, what happens?
My foot swells up. This one was different because it always starts on my left big toe, right? that's where it starts. Bro, you muted.
Yo, this nigga looking like I'm gonna get you sucker toe.
Yes.
Yes.
Yo, exactly. Yo, it's always in my left big toe. It's the only part of my. This time it hit my left elbow a little bit too. I was tending my left elbow, but because it goes into your joints.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, it's always the left big toe. Right, by the next day. I'll be like, oh, I think the gout popping up. I should feel a little tender. But this time, it just lasted way longer than it usually lasts like 2-3 days with the medicine, and it kind of goes away. But this has been a week. So I had to go to the doctor yesterday and get a steroid. What's that steroid called? Press or something?
Prednisone?
Yes. To kill the swelling, which is working. So peace to my
doctor. Did you have to get a shot or did you have to take it?
No, he got me. I got pills.
So be careful because prednisone will make you swell up. And make your face look puffy. I mean, you gotta take it.
Only got 7.
Oh, you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's just for a week. I don't even think I'll take the full 7. Hey, Ivy.
Take the full 7. Don't be a nigga.
Well, you know,
take the full 7.
It's good. I'm good. After about 3 days, you'll be like, we good. I'm good.
It's just like extra medication.
Yeah.
I save those for later for the next time.
I mean, let me go look in my box and see what's going on.
What I got here?
I got two
Vicodins. I got a Percocet.
Wait, when I tell y'all that's a real. Greg has a bag at the bottom of his the linen closet, and that shit got pain prescriptions from like 02, 05. It's Percocet because he can't. He can't take a lot of prescribed pain medications because he works for transit, right?
Yeah, so he can't be looping shit.
So at different times when he's gotten injured, he hasn't taken the full prescription. I'd be hitting that bitch up on a regular. You would think let me go ahead and refill my shit real quick. Yeah, because he ain't gonna take it.
He got a full pharmacy in there.
But
so it's going down a lot. Like I'm much, much better today. But like, yo, I'm telling you, like over the weekend, like all jokes aside, like I was up. Like I could barely walk in the house.
You weren't able to, clearly no bike riding for you for a while.
No, none of that. I ain't worked out in a week.
I mean, it was too hot too anyway, but.
And then I got to give it, you know, to the LGBT community. Peace to the trans, I guess he was trans. No, I don't. I guess he was trans guy who was on the steps. I had to dig in deep
face
and walk up the hill.
Because we waiting. Waiting to see if we got to mute this nigga.
Look at Bar face. Yeah. We just created the clip for the week right now. That's going to be the clip. That's the clip right now. So I had to walk up the steps because a gout, you're supposed to get tart cherry juice.
It's an anti-inflammatory.
And I ran out, so I had to walk up the Batman steps up to here. You know where they are,
to
the supermarket up top of the hill. And I'm struggling. And the boy's sitting on the steps. And he's like, hey, baby, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, oh, man, my foot hurting and all that. He said, where can I get some cigarettes? I know he's angling to try to ask me for some bread. And I'm like, man, you probably have to go down to Broadway, man, because ain't nothing really like that up this way. And he's supposed to keep the convo going. And I'm like, bro, like, I'm just trying to get up steps. So I go up the rest of the steps. But I can't walk away from him, really, because it hurts so much to walk. So I'm walking mad slow. So I got to engage with this nigga because I can't get away.
You can't get away. You can't be like, all right, later.
Yeah, none of that. Bro, I was crying right now. So then I go up the steps, I hobble around the damn supermarket, get my tart cherry juice and some cherries and a couple other things. I'm walking, and I got to walk back down the steps. I'm praying to God the boy ain't there. I turn the corner, the nigga's still there. I say, God,
of course he is. Hey, you just came from the store, so you got some change.
The nigga says to me, baby, can you reach down in your bag and give me something that you got to drink? I'm parched. I said, nigga, what? I was gonna give you some shit from the supermarket. Like, what are you talking about? I said, nah, man, I can't, man. I just gotta get home, man. And he's like, well, you know, you should give me something that would relieve all that pain in your body.
Oh, no.
I see you hobbling down the steps. It would relieve all the pain if you do something for somebody else. That's why you got all that pain you running through your body. And again, I can't walking down the steps is even harder than walking up.
Because you got to put the pressure on
him. So I can't get away from him. So I'm like, so peace to him, whoever he was. I ain't seen them in the neighborhood before.
But did you give him anything?
No, I'm not giving this thing a bottle, a whole bottle.
No, I don't think he might have. You ain't had no loose change.
I was just wanting to get home. So peace to that man. A woman or whatever he identifies as.
Okay, whatever he identifies as. Okay.
Yeah, so.
You about to go left. Okay.
Let's move on. Let's move on. That's been my life the last couple of days.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And one more quick one. Peace to my son, Julian, who actually I got to see yesterday for the first time.
Oh, Julian's expecting, right?
No.
Why did I think Julian was expecting?
No, ain't no pop-up.
Oh, no, he's getting married.
Yes, he's getting married, but that got pushed to next year because of COVID. But I haven't seen Julian since February.
Wow.
Because of COVID.
Right.
So when I went up to my doctor's in White Plains, so when I went to the doctor, I got to see him yesterday, so that was nice. Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's move forward.
Okay.
Let's do, we got a couple big topics to do to cover. Well, you know what? We got to do the RIPs. Rest in peace to John Lewis and C.T. Vivian.
Yeah.
Two giants.
Is this the last surviving of the SNCC crew?
I think. Is Julian Bond still living? Is Julian Bond?
I think Julian Bond passed last year.
You're right. He did pass. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
You might be right. That might be the last of them. Well, Diane Nash is still alive.
Okay.
Because she was interviewed a lot. When the passings happened, but I mean, regardless, there's very few.
Right.
There's probably like less than five now, like because they're all in their 70s, close to 80. They're,
Actually, they would have all been in their 80s because John Lewis was the youngest, and he was in his 80s.
Yes. I think Diane Nash is the kind of last one that people really know. It might be some ones that were like little, like second, third lieutenants. But so I'm going to just say love and peace to them for what they did for us. And also love and peace to their families and The thing about John and C.T., Mr. Well, John, I'm tripping.
Reverend.
with Reverend C.T. Vivian and Mr. Lewis, put handles on them names, is that up until fairly recently, they were very healthy.
Yeah, we actually talked about that a few weeks ago because Congressman Lewis had not been well, but then he was out of bed like 3 weeks ago because he took a picture at the Black Lives Matter sign. But apparently he was in hospice. So that must have been a very quick
decline. Took a turn for the worse.
Yeah, because he was standing on his own volition. And he was outside chilling.
He was lucid, like he was.
Yeah.
And Reverend Vivian, I've seen video of him fairly recently, like within the last year, and he looked good. He's thin, lean, but like not sickly thin, just lean.
Right,
he's
right.
A lean man, spry and locked in. So. They both obviously, had some health issues that took the turn for the worse. But I obviously we we'd have to do a whole show, two shows really, to kind of discuss what they did. Yeah, what they did.
Legends,
They're legendary figures.
Legendary figures, and it just breaks my heart. Listen, people die. That's what happens. They get older and they die. The old guard passes. It just feels like there is not a transition.
No, there's not.
In place. It doesn't feel like that politically. It doesn't feel like in every facet of life, culture, whatever, as our giants are leaving us. And I also do understand that those who are alive, like that generation, who are now in their between like 80s or who have died like in the past decade in their 80s, who were of age during the 60s, obviously we're not going to have another generation that was quite that impactful just because of the nature of the world, the country, the evolution of politics, literature, entertainment. Like there just was room to be more impactful, if that makes sense, right? So it's not so much that we're ever going to have a next Maya or a next Tony or a next John Lewis or a next, Julian Bond, because there aren't these same spaces to accomplish, but it still just does not feel like it doesn't feel like we have identified people who are dope.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like we have identified people who are great. Does that make sense? And maybe you don't know it when they're 50 or 60, right?
I agree with that. It's hard to know when somebody's great, like to the level of greatness that we're talking about until you kind of look back at it.
Right. Maybe that's the thing that it can only be done in retrospect. I mean, because it does comfort me. Like, I look at Ta-Nehisi Coates, and I'm like, okay, we have another great writer. We have another prolific writer. I look at some of the people who are emerging in different ways out of the movement. And I'm like, okay, we do have voices and we do have up and coming journalists. And there are people that I'm hopeful about, but with Congressman Lewis and C.T. Vivian and that old guard dying, what it means is that now it's on us. Like we kind of had them there as a retaining wall, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even now, even when you go beyond Black folks and you think about how hard we are praying for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to pull through, like she 80-something too. These people deserve the rest,
she's not gonna make it much longer. And I don't mean that as disrespectful, but she's
older. Been in the hospital like 3 or 4 times lately.
Yeah, she in and out. And I mean, but we are really still sitting there like, listen, 80-year-old lady who should be able to be chilling right now, like we really need you to hold on.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to our elders. And that was what really, Congressman Lewis and C.T. Vivian, they should be celebrated. Congressman Lewis should be celebrated, but I can't help, like he lived such a life, but I can't help but be just enormously sad that he died in the midst of this bullshit.
Of this bullshit, yeah.
You know, what he literally laid his body down for.
Literally.
For us to be able to move past. So imagine like to have gone through all that, to have seen a Black president and then like,
this is it.
See people just take it all down.
What do you think, bro?
It is incredibly sad to see these folks. I think the difference in generations is that particular generation, I would probably say they were a little more singularly focused.
Yeah.
They were much more operating with a smaller infrastructure in terms of the amount of people. So they would have these sort of, they would have these sort of very federal things that they wanted to accomplish, and then they would have these very national state things that they wanted to accomplish, and then down to local municipalities and how they were would be able to enact change. And I think that that's what we, you know, that's not necessarily what we see here.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that the impact is their impact is definitely going to register. I think it's just going to be registered different with this generation and how we look at what has been accomplished and how it's been accomplished versus with those guys and women. I mean, yeah, I just think that, you know, he was, you know, he spoke at the March on Washington, right? Like, he's 23 years old.
Yeah.
And he got stage time at the March on Washington, which really should be an indication of what he meant to that movement internally, right? Because this was sort of this was the big stage, using air quotes. So, Reverend C.T. Vivian and those folks, they fought the fight. You know, they fought the fight
literally.
And they got, you know, 80 and look, man, God bless them. That's a solid run, particularly from the era that they were born and raised in.
Yeah.
You know, men and women particularly don't live that long.
They live some hard lives, like on them Lewis on a farm in Alabama in the back.
Sharecropping farm.
Yeah, man. It's brutal.
Like, my folks come from that. So, I that's a hard life, man. So,
yeah, it is.
You know, God bless him for, you know, being able, and also, too, God bless him for embracing his sort of popularity.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to Comic-Con and cosplaying as himself and all that. Yeah.
And made himself available to the youth. It felt like he's I'm here. Like, if you need to talk to me. Like, I'm here. Like, I'm gonna be at the Black Caucus. I might pop out homecoming. Like, I'm gonna be here. Like, if you need me,
absolutely what you want and what you would expect a representative to be.
Yeah, I'm actually, just real sidebar, I'm actually met him once, totally randomly. I was in Hartsfield Airport.
I knew your ass was gonna say you were in Hartsfield Airport. I ran into this nigga in Hartsfield Airport, motherfucker.
I swear to God, I'm walking up the, you know, the hall or whatever the terminals, and I'm like, damn, and he was dolo. He didn't have like people around him. I was like, John Lewis, oh shit. So, you know me, I ran up on him, you know, to show that love. I'm so pissed off I didn't take a picture. I'm so hurt. But I talked to him for a little bit, it was brief, and he wouldn't even remember. Just like, hey, how you doing? But the funny thing is, like, I'm talking to him and I see somebody walking towards us. And I look over, and it's Jason Jeter, who managed T.I.
Yeah.
He happened to be in the airport, too. And I was like, do you know him? And he was like, no, I never met him before. So then me and Jason just start talking to him, like, yeah, Mr. Lewis. Da, 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 da. And Jason's like, yeah, I manage T.I., and I live in Atlanta. And we talked to him for like a good 10, 15 minutes or whatever. But it was, you know, I'm just mad I didn't take a picture of shit. He's just like you say, he's very approachable. He wasn't on that funny shit. He didn't play me like, I told you my Coretta Scott story, the Scott King story, right?
Did you tell us that Coretta Scott? You've told us many of these stories where you ran up on motherfuckers in the street.
Coretta Scott King played me crazy. I ran up on her in the airport in Pittsburgh. I was with Julian. He was like really small, like 4 or 5. And I was like, hey, Miss King, how you doing? I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate everything. She looked at me, she was like, thank you. And then turned back and started talking to her. I was like, I never.
What do you want her to say, though, Jeff?
I mean, just, I told you I ran up on Diane Carroll. I mean, she told me that.
She gave you a kiss or some shit. But you think?
And she told me that she inspired me. Well, cool, I'll eat that. I mean, just say something. I'm a young nigga.
You know you're not going to get that from Coretta Scott. It's Coretta Scott.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I mean, I've seen her in the airport. She's there. I mean, she had a couple people with her, but it wasn't like she was eating some Chick-fil-A.
In fairness, you.
But she didn't play you.
You were absolutely the 15th person in the last hour.
Minimum.
That came up to her in that airport.
Minimum.
100%.
That's my point. Like, it's Coretta Scott. Like, arguably.
I knew y'all were gonna take her side. I knew y'all gonna take Miss King's side over my ass.
Because you also said she was talking to some people. So she acknowledged you. She said, thank you. But, like, not.
It was the way she did it. She gave me the little quick.
She
gave you the church. She gave you the church. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't want to disparage the queen of the movie. So let's move on.
I'm the first lady.
How tired you got to be after being a celebrity for 70
come
years.
Come on. Yeah, man.
Let's move on. Yeah. So anyway, so we definitely want to say, you know, love to Reverend Vivian and Congressman King. Tonight we got something we'll be talking about next week. I can't wait. Snoop Dogg and DMX are doing a versus tonight. Who y'all got?
I got Snoop. I know people have X. I know there are fair arguments for both.
I got
Snoop because X has. Obviously, X has Swiss joints. Swiss is going to help him. I would put him together. And X is very powerful and commanding, and he is healthy right now, I think, which means he's probably going to give us about 3, 4, 5 prayers. He might pull the Bible out.
Bible study.
It might be a whole situation. But even though X has bangers, Snoop has more jams. And in my opinion, the person who gets the people in a party frame of mind is the one who takes the battle more.
I think Snoop is more quotable, so he might take it just off that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a landslide, but I definitely think Snoop. I think you know, look, X had a hell of a 3-year run, right? Like that burst is like incomparable, right? But then You look at Snoop and you're like, you know, listen, Snoop got a couple joints in there that was kind of the very mid.
Right.
There were double albums that were like, okay, my nigga, what are we doing here? but I mean, what he can just simply take off the Chronic, but what he can do between 92 and 96.
Alone. And then bring it back, like, You got his Dre produced. You got the Chronic alone and like Deep Cover, right? Then you got Doggy Style, but then you got Murder Was the Case, but then you got like, and then you got, you know, his maybe two No Limit joints, but then then you got the Pharrell joints.
Yeah, the Pharrell run is right? The Pharrell run is going to be tough to beat.
That was my thing. By the time you go from It Ain't No Fun to Motherfucking Beautiful to Drive It Like It's Hot, I'm done. I'm gone. Bye. That was great. Yeah.
And he got the Charlie Wilson chorus joint too.
He's got a couple joints that just like with you Uncle Charlie, kind of forgot. Where you kind of like, oh, I forgot he made that. That rock is so.
And he did a gospel album. And he did a reggae. I don't know. Like he might bring out a Sexual Seduction.
He's got to play Sexual Seduction.
Yeah, like
I'm gonna be the outlier. I'm gonna go with X, even though I think, you know, Snoop probably take him. I'm just gonna go with X because I just think the run is short, but it was powerful. Like he had a lot of records in 3 years that were just like boom, 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 boom.
This should be X and Ja or something. It should be X and somebody else who has some Swiss production or who was equally yelling at us through the fucking. That's what it
is. I definitely think that their styles don't mesh, right?
Like, at all. Sonically?
I don't think the
production.
And look, I get it. You know, they're marquee talents, and I don't think it's going to be like some landslide. Like, I'm not one of them extremist dudes where it's like, oh, he's going to wash him. Yeah. It's not going to be that. But I definitely think, you know, I think X is going to struggle with Snoop between, like, you know,
like the second half.
It's going to be a little, tight.
Okay. I also don't think.
Realistically,
sorry, go ahead. Finish, Sean. You were saying, but realistically?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also don't think. I think that X is going to have a problem staying with the format. Like, X don't do linear. Like, he doesn't do that.
X don't do directions.
Yeah, that's not. I don't really know what's going to happen, but I don't really think it's going to be one. This is going to be 1 through 20. I think this is going to meander through some shit and take us some places.
I hope we don't see any meltdowns.
I definitely think X and Snoop are going to be, I think to some people, shockingly respectful of each other.
I know. I believe that. I also believe there might be. I also believe that might they might fuck around and have a gospel moment now, like Snoop.
Because X
has been pulling out his Bible and pulling out the scripture. He has said for a while he was led towards ministry. Now he says he's been thinking more about it. And again, like we said, Snoop did a double gospel album, and it wasn't like a. It wasn't like a Kanye joint. It was actually good. It was very good.
Yeah.
And he marketed. He didn't even market it mainstream. Like, he marketed directly to gospel. And it was more like Snoop as a featured artist on a project that had like contemporary gospel artists, classic gospel artists. You know, like Rance Allen is on it. You know what I mean? Like, he had a little bit of everybody. And you know, and he actually has a gospel imprint on. What's the Sony Red? What's the gospel label that was inside the Sony system? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it used to be called Verity. But
Verity, Verity. Yeah, I don't know if this guy, I think that was, might be RCA Inspiration.
He has
a gospel imprint. Mm-hmm. So, I think that they might have a come to Jesus moment or something. I'm with it too. You know, yeah, Snoop is a Clark Sisters fan and everything. I think what happened is that both of them wanted to do it, and there weren't artists that you could match.
Yeah,
alternate artists that you could match with either one of them either, because who else would you put with Snoop?
Yeah, it'd be hard. You know,
and you can't put 50 with anybody.
Yeah, because 50
because he's an asshole. Yeah, so it's like
chaos.
Yeah,
I want to. I just want to say again. If Tim or anybody from Versus listening, or please, can we get? I love this. I still want to see some old school shit. Like, give me Frankie Beverly versus Charlie. Like. You know, maybe get Ron Isley's, you know, in good health, get him against, you know, so I just want to see some of that too. I don't want it to start to turn into the more contemporary, you know, artists. I'm with all of this, but like this, like we can do Patty versus Anita or something like that. Give me some of that. Give me some Saturday morning. Give me a Saturday morning clean up the house versus.
You know what I'm saying? Well, it might open up now that they're with Apple.
Yes.
So the thing is, they're not so much with Apple as Apple is also licensing the content. So they are still on IG Live, but
you can stream it through Apple now too.
In addition to IG Live, so Versus is Apple is the exclusive music partner, meaning it won't go to Tidal, it won't go,
you'll go to Spotify,
whatever. Oh, okay. But it's still with Instagram Live. But it's also just now if you have. You can stream it through the Apple Music app, or you can watch it through Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
And they have a chat function in there as well, but it's not the same. Not the same as IG. But it gives you options, right? So, like, if you want clarity, if you want to see a higher definition, image instead of just like throwing your IG Live up on the screen. Mm. You can watch on Apple. So I think what I actually might do tonight is that I usually connect it to my TV screen. I might put Apple on my screen, but follow the comments on IG Live in my computer. Because I feel like it's more fun watching the comments on IG Live.
All right. Mm-hmm. So let's get to a little TV. This is when Brian and I go to mute.
Sure.
Bro, you turn your air conditioner off full blast now, bro. You good. I see you dabbing your brow come and talk, get a little
because
nervous.
I'm perpetually one episode behind on I May Destroy, just because I can't binge it. Like, that's not a show I can binge.
No, it's not a binge.
I can only do it one episode at a time. Yeah. So it's going to be a minute. But I did want to note before y'all get into your shit, Jeff, didn't I get you into Love After Lockup?
You talked about it, but I haven't done either. But I see there's a new season on. I see a lot of chatter.
I just
wanted
to acknowledge that the new season of Love After Lockup just started. And there's a new season of something else that just started that I can't remember. But I also want to acknowledge, before y'all get into your shit, my shit. I haven't said this yet. I just want to give a shout out to The Young and the Restless. Because while they have been on hiatus, they've been playing all the classic shit. Like, the other day, they played, like, the first two episodes ever of the soap. So, you know, soap operas don't really give you like on demand options. Like,
No.
You can't
too much content.
Cause they way too much content. Right. So I've been, like, I'm almost mad they're going back into production because I'm like, just start that bitch at 1980 and let it roll.
Let it rock out.
Let me just go back to that because there's some juicy-ass storylines, people I forgot, like, people who were on the show when I first, because I've been watching it since I was in high school, so since, like, 1989. So, like, people that were there when I first started watching, but seeing them younger or, like, the old families and names that I hear the characters mention, but I don't actually know who they are. It's been a delight. I have enjoyed it thoroughly. Victor Newman is that nigga every decade. I love it. So shout out to Young and the Restless. It's damn near black. It's damn near black programming.
Peace to the auntie corner.
That was a full auntie corner. And Eric Braden, aka Victor Newman, is on Twitter cussing.
I saw that Donald Trump and them out all the time.
I love it so much. All right, I'm gonna let y'all get to y'all. Y'all text me when y'all done.
All right, so before we start, I want to give a new show I've been watching called Marcella. It's on Netflix. She's a police woman on the show, but it's just way more to it than that. It's a UK show. This is their third season. The shit is amazing. Like, it's so ill. There's so much shit going on. It's like it's one of those shows they don't care like who they kill. Like, it don't be like, oh, nobody, all the main characters are, no. Like, some you'd be like, oh shit, like what the it's so many WTF moments per episode on this show. The little background on her, she's a policewoman, but she suffers from blackouts. So she'll do some shit and not remember what happened, you know? But she's also, like, the best detective that they have. So she can solve the shit.
The show that it starts where her husband's asking for a divorce?
Yes, Marcella.
I started watching that, and then I thank you for reminding me, because I would have forgotten all about that.
That show is It is so ill.
I watched the first episode.
Okay.
And then I think I was doing something, so I got distracted. But thank you, because I would have forgotten about it if you hadn't just mentioned it.
Yeah, and what they do is, like, each season there's, like, obviously a criminal, whatever, and they solve the case. But they find the way to lead into the next season. It's not like it cut, start again. It's just ill. You got to watch it, but it's unbelievable. So I wanted to mention that. Let's talk. So have you watched any Sunday Best has been great. Again, I watched
it. Haven't seen it. I keep forgetting. Sunday is wide open, too, so I don't know.
They got a white lady from Oakland who can sing. I think she might win. She can go. She's definitely the white lady who grew up with all the black folks. You know what I'm saying? But she can go. Have you been watching any of the OWN stuff? Did you watch Family vs. Fiancé or Love?
I did. I started the Family vs. Fiancé season, and you know I'm all in on Love and Marriage Huntsville.
Let's deal with Huntsville real quick.
Where do you start? Where?
You know what's hard for me watching this season now is that it came out that Mel divorced Martell.
Because they start the season so happy.
So happy, like we're getting it back. We're back, and Mel's pregnant.
Sean's
in the season.
Face.
I'm the bro's fake. They're so happy. Melanie's pregnant. The season starts. She has the baby.
About to have the baby.
Last episode, she has the baby.
Mm-hmm.
The one that was Saturday. So, so it's weird to see that and then see, like, now she's divorced. She moved to Atlanta. She left them in Alabama. Yeah, she's gone.
I didn't know she had moved.
Oh, she bounced. She's in Atlanta. She's done. She took the kids and moved to Atlanta. He didn't fight it. The rumor is that the side piece, he got her pregnant.
Oh, they're definitely still together. I saw her Instagram. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the side piece is pregnant, and Melanie...
Allegedly.
Melanie definitely moved to Atlanta with the kids, and is, you know, I'm sure going to pop up on one of these Atlanta reality shows sooner than later.
Yikes, all around.
So to see the season kind of like with them kind of being like, we're back together and we're so tied in and everything. And it's kind of weird knowing what the end game is now.
Well, their back together was so weird anyway. Like he's texting her from, you know, the grocery store saying that he's there. And
FaceTiming her. So she,
not wanting to acknowledge the cheating at all, which is
yeah, like, he's like, I don't really talk about that no more. Like, nigga, you was with this woman for like 3 years.
Y'all were in a relationship. You bought her a car, bro.
You are word, and I heard paid the rent
and set her up in an apartment
and put her through nursing school.
What?
Yeah.
I saw the vacation pictures. I did not know about
vacation
college.
Pictures with the side piece.
Wow.
I did love the brother this week though, Melanie's brother, because he like really stepped to Martell, like, yo, like you did my you didn't like okay, go talk about it. What do you like?
Where were you? This has been going on for 4 years. Mel has been put through this for 2 years, and now you're on the show in the ring store saying something about it. Like, okay, brother.
Think it's too little too late?
I think you are on camera.
Ah. Okay. Look at
that. Be happening. That's
funny. He needed his 2 minutes.
Yeah. I what I don't like this season so far is they seem to be trying to figure out. It's weird because Marceau has barely even been on the show so far. He's been
I hate him anyway. So,
you know, but what I'm saying is regardless of your hate of him, Inka, he is a main cast member. It's like, where's this nigga at? Like, and Tisha too. Like, it's like they're trying to figure out a way to kind of bring them in, and they haven't really figured out a way to kind of incorporate the other two couples. Really, they're really like they've really I will say this: the Holtz are EPs of this show as well.
Right, so they're the central characters, and everybody else.
But they've really become the central characters so far.
Right. So how do you even add Marceau and Tisha in when they're so on the outs? Like, her out of the whatever the event was.
That was disrespectful, bro.
That was insane.
Even Martell was like, "Yo, word, you really doing this?" Even Martell's raggedy ass was like, "Yo, you wild raggedy." Right, did you see this episode, bro?
No, I didn't see this one, but you know how I feel about them, man. It's not that I don't fuck with them. It's just like, it's, you know, I hate more for the show, you know, it's got an opinion about every other reality show, and they be dealing with literally the same shit. It's literally the same shit.
It's literally the same.
You know what I'm saying? So it's nothing off brand.
It's mess.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, and so it's just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I'll just put it like that.
I got you. And I understand what you're saying. I've been enjoying it because I'm a fan of the show, but I definitely feel like as if it's going to keep going just through the whole season where the hosts are like the whole main thing and the other ones are just kind of ancillary. I don't know. I liked it more when it was more balanced and they were all dealing with stuff as opposed to like the whole to the main guys.
They might be, and I don't have any understanding of their production or their network situation. But what you might be seeing is, you know, listen, you know, they were expected to be on air and to deliver these episodes, and they might have to work around the fact that these people are really on a we're not fucking with each other type of situation. So they might have to do these sort of pod of taping in order to make the show work and still be deliverable and still be. And again, I don't know where they were in relation to when COVID hit, what that means. All of those things can kind of play a role into how the tape. And again, I'm just using that as a broad stroke. I don't have any in-depth knowledge about what they're
doing. Yeah, but there's factors here that might make it go that way. Let's talk real quick about Family vs. Fiancé. this is my show right here. Because like I said, I said last week, because the thing about this show is, I don't think so. If they're doing it, it's God bless. I don't know how they're doing it, but it still doesn't feel like the cameras are affecting the people. Like once they get into that house, the issues that they have, they come out and they go we're going to be on camera, so we ain't going to talk like that. I don't feel that energy, like that they're aware of the cameras as much as some others. So now also this is, you know, you only come on it once. Like it's not like you're in it for a series where you can kind of like adjust yourself. You're on there for one episode. But every week it's like, this is crazy. And it's just... Okay. What did you think about this week?
Was this week the one where the guy did the sister's taxes?
And, yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I love that show. It's
you saw Bruffy. It was yo.
It's so good. Like, I do think that the ladies, the woman side, like her family, was fully aware of the cameras and were not trying to turn up at all. Like,
oh,
they were
okay.
Very cognizant of who they wanted to represent and what issues they had with the guy.
I agree with that to a point. I think they went there not to turn up. But again, you know, the producers of the show would know how to make it work. So when the sisters kind of confronted each other about not speaking because they're very close, and that the guy had kind of separated her, they started like bawling, like crying.
Yeah, there were some real issues there.
There was some real shit. And then the sister was getting married. Like, she cried so much, she like went to another room and started crying, closed the door. Like, and then when the mom confronted him and confronted the bride about, I'm not happy with who you're married, she started getting emotional. So I think you're right. I think they went there like, we're going to keep it classy. Yeah. But I think
the dad is like a pastor though, right?
Yeah, he's a pastor. Yeah. Okay. So I totally get
that they are concerned that their daughter is marrying a nigga with no job. Like, he's a scammer, a little this and a little that. He's doing taxes and
nigga.
You know,
I wouldn't give that nigga
shit.
My tax. That nigga, no. I wouldn't give that nigga access to my social security number. Man, you're gonna have 16 credit cards open up in your name by the end of the month.
Also, what regular person gets charged $700 to do their taxes?
And he said,
I have never paid over $200.
And he said that she was getting back $700. This boy, check this out. He said that whoever did her taxes initially said she was going to get back $700. And she told her sister that, I'm getting back $700. And he said, I can do better than that. She gave him her taxes. He ended up getting her back $3,000. I'm like, you're getting audited. Like, your shit don't jump from $700 to like $3,000 return without some real trickery shit going on.
And then he just took $700 off top, like as
he just took, but didn't tell her. She gave him the taxes like, you're marrying my sister. Yeah, you're marrying my sister, so I'm gonna hook you up. Like, and then he just took $700 and didn't tell her. So then she was like, where's my $700? He's like, oh, that's what I charge. She was like, you never told me you was charging me shit. And that became a huge thing, which is why the sisters, but the dude is crazy. The dude actually said, he was talking to his family, and he was, because his family don't like them. And he was like, well, yeah, you know, right now it's cool, but the plan is to like get her away from her family, you know, so we could do our thing. So he said it. He's like, I'm going to separate her from her family so I can control the situation.
Yeah, abusive nigga 101.
Abusive nigga 101. And so it was interesting to me that when they did this whole show, she started to let things out because I felt like she was like, oh, I'm in a safe space. So now I can tell this nigga how I really feel about things because he can't jump on me. Say it again, bro.
You muted.
Once I let it out, I'm kind of freed from it a little bit, right? Like, I can let it out here because, like you said, I know I got 72 hours before we're alone again.
Exactly. And my family's here and stuff. And that's what bro, you want to hear some down home 101 shit that you do not do. So they invited her mom. Now her mom's a first lady of church. He invited her mom over to the house, to their house for dinner. The mother said this dude cursed the whole time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like a slip up, like, oh, I'm sorry. No, she said he cursed freely the whole meal.
And was like, this is who I am. If you can't take it, then I'm never coming to your house again. So now they come to the house, he sits in the car.
And he also tells her, this is my house, so I can curse as much as I want, and you can't say nothing about it. And so when he brings her to see her family, he sits in the car, and she talks to them outside.
Yeah, come on. Get your drink ready, nigga. What is we doing here?
This nigga was awful.
Nigga, come on, nigga.
But the thing, but Peep Game though, we going on this a long time. I'm about to cut it, but like Peep Game, this is a trip. So he bought his, who came to, from his side. Three people come from your side. So he bought his sister, who was, you know, street kind of street chick, about that action. He bought his aunt. He bought his Aunt Vicky, who I loved.
Love Aunt Vicky.
Love she had her. The short blonde. She, Vicky's like the firecracker. You know what I'm saying?
Vicky smoked a little weed.
Weed. Yeah, all that. But if you listen to Vicky, she's actually dropping jewels. Mm-hmm. She's actually dropping jewels. And he bought his grandmother, Charletta. Right? So I'm looking
Miss
at the
grandmother.
Miss Charletta. So I'm looking at the grandmother and Aunt Vicky, and I'm like, okay, you, they're not like you. Like, they're, like, I don't understand where you get the disrespect from, because they're very, like, solid people. I don't, I think the nigga, I actually think the nigga did some time. I think he did some time. Yeah. And he got these bad habits by being while being in jail, and he hasn't broken out of them, and nobody's kind of talked to him about. He looks at it as like, these are my habits, and I'm not getting out of them. And you know, even when she would cry, he'd be like, "Oh, why are you crying? Like, I don't. Why are you all emotional?" Like, he was a terrible nigga, but
he was so much older than her too, right?
Yeah, much older. Yeah, so they decided not to get married, which I was happy
Thank
about.
God.
And I hope she gets away from it. But all those listen, Family Fiancé, I'm telling you, it's a great show. Check it out.
Makes you feel really good about your own life and your family. Yeah. You're not going through that shit.
Ain't I'm over here looking down on niggas. your shit raggedy.
Raggedy.
I want to talk about, now you can pop back in. I want to mention, there's a couple of really big stories. I want to talk about one now. Let's talk a little bit about Nick Cannon.
Wait, we're not going to talk about I May Destroy You?
Oh shit! I May Destroy You. I like this episode this week because there was a little sexual stuff. Well, not really. It wasn't
really heavy.
It wasn't heavy, but it was interesting.
Seen them, like, having a good time.
Having a good time, but then there was undertones to them having a good time, and I'm seeing more and more that T. Like, what's up with her, B?
Terry, so Trav tried to tell me that Terry had something to do with the initial assault. And I was like,
yeah.
She wasn't even there. It doesn't make sense. But we find out this episode that she gave the okay for dude to just leave her randomly in the street when she was fucked up, which,
yep.
You know, that's what happened to her. And not to lay blame on really either one of them.
Yeah, no.
It's murky, but...
Yeah, but Terry is something.
Terry ain't clean.
She ain't clean at all. And I don't even understand the Italy thing. And it's just, I don't know. Even like, she's mad at her because she's friendly with the white girl. It's just weird, man. Like, but then you see her sitting in the tub talking to Kwame, and you see she could be a sweet person. Like, it's just, her character is almost as interesting as Arabella because it's so murky.
Right.
Like, it's like the layers keep kind of peeling, and it's like, what the hell is up with this girl, you know? Show is great, man. It's so great. Like, I look forward to, I always watch it twice because I feel like I need to catch
it. I need subtitles for the second go round because
British
slang rules.
They hit me with the slang and all that. But I love
the music is great on the show.
The music is awesome. And I feel like it's starting to catch a wave now. Like, I'm seeing more press about it. I'm seeing, you know, Michaela in more press. I feel like people are starting to kind of catch on. I don't know if it'll ever be, like, massive as Insecure, obviously, because it's British and the accents and stuff. But I feel like there's more interest. I think by the time, you know, we hit, like, late in the season, I think, you know, people will really, especially when the weather starts to change, maybe get a little cooler. I think people will kind of get into it and play catch up on it.
I think it's interesting, like, that they're not making Arabella perfect. Like,
at
she's
all.
Sort of irresponsible, right?
Sort of.
She blew through her whole book advance and hasn't written the book.
and just started writing another book, and they're like, that's not what we paid you for.
Right. And then we see in the next episode, she's going to hop to Italy randomly.
And,
which is like,
yeah, and
which
run
is
up
not
on
a big
man.
Deal when you live in England. Like, it's an hour flight, but that costs money. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and just run up on your boy.
Yeah.
Which you know, yeah. Yeah. I love how nobody's perfect on this show.
Nobody's perfect.
You know, everybody's, I mean, and I think that's why, where I really compare it to Insecure, that all the characters are flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no kind of like perfect person. Like, you know, there's no,
yeah.
You know, like that was always my problem. Well, not a problem, but that was always the kind of thing I had a little weird about girlfriends. I felt like Joan early was kind of like the perfect one. Like, she had a great job, she had a great house, blah, blah, blah. But then, like, as the series went on, they started to make her flawed too. But earlier, I felt like she was kind of like Miss Perfect, and the other ones were kind of very flawed. But then I think they kind of evened it out as the series went on.
Speaking of flawed, did you watch The Chi on Sunday?
I can't.
Well, we see that Keisha is alive.
Just alive. There. I'm glad Sonny caught Emmett with the fuck shit, which was ridiculous. Like, this nigga's having a whole block party. It was like, Sonny don't know. Like, it's just
like, you don't go check on your business during a blackout.
Yo, they had a blackout on The Chi, and niggas was partying. I'm like, that's not a time to party. That's when business get broken
in.
Especially
in Chicago. What?
Yeah, they acting like it was a cook. Oh, let's have a good time. I'm like, no, that's not how it really works. Like, there's usually kind of some violence and, you know, some stores getting broken into and whatnot. They acting like they out here doing the fucking, you know, the bus stop electric slide. Like, yeah, I can't with The Chi. I'm just watching The Chi now just because. Like, I just
want to know what happened to the girl. Yeah,
I'm hate watching The Chi at this point. I don't want to talk about. I don't want to talk about The Chi no more.
I feel you.
Let's talk a little, Nick. Okay, now you come back. Let's talk a little bit about Nick Cannon. So Nick Cannon had a really rough week. He went on his radio. Was this a radio show or was this podcast?
His podcast.
Podcast with Professor Griff.
Video podcast.
Video podcast with Professor Griff, formerly of Public Enemy.
Professor Griff. Yeah.
And they started
to stop right there.
Literally. And they start to get into the my brother to a conversation, and Nick goes deep into why the Jews, you know, do what they do, and, you know, obviously, like how the white man is coming at us and the melanin.
He goes into the whole rhetoric of, you know, black people being the true Israel. Like, it was a combination of Nation of Islam rhetoric and black Israelite as rhetoric.
Now, and I just want to say one thing. And this is me. I don't want nobody else here getting in trouble. There were some things in that diatribe that I didn't disagree with.
But that's the whole thing about Hotep shit, is that some of it actually is real.
But
it's mixed up with bullshit.
Yes.
And people say both of them. So now, that's the problem.
Him going at the Jewish community, I have to say, for the record, I did not agree with.
But the thing is, there's a couple things. The first thing is, so I know from someone who knows, like, based on Nick's apology and based on someone I know who knows Nick and who has spoken to Nick, Nick claims that he didn't know Griff was going to go there. First of all, this is literally all Griff.
Wait, what is Griff going to do? Yeah, where else
this
is Griff going
to
go?
This is literally all Griff goes on platforms to talk about is black people and Jewish people. Griff don't talk about nothing if he doesn't bring Jewish people into it in some way, shape, form, fashion. And for those who don't know, Griff used to be Public Enemy's Minister of Information. In 89, which is literally only a couple years into Public Enemy's.
Yeah, like, they was on fire at that point.
On fire. Griff did a story with the Washingtonian. It wasn't the Washington Post, but it was another Washington paper that may not exist anymore. And his anti-Semitism was so on 1,000. That, like, it caught so much fire hell, kind of like two different Jewish anti-defamation leagues coming at them.
At
the time, Def Jam was still distributed by Columbia, whose parent company was still CBS. It wasn't under Sony yet. And CBS was getting named, checked in these suits, in these boycotts. And Griff called out the quote unquote Jew who runs CBS in his interview, because he was like,
that was Yetnikoff, right?
I think so. And he was like, I must be telling some kind of truth, because otherwise the Jew who runs CBS would have sat me down already, something like that. So he was calling out people.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say that, to remember that Nick doesn't just have Wilding Out. He is the chairman of Team Nick and has been for some time. Like, had offices in the Viacom building. And Viacom is now back under partnership with CBS. So obviously, I'm sure there was somebody somewhere who without even listening to the shit was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah,
we're not doing this shit again. That said, so when I first even saw the little clip that people saw, I was like, it's Griff.
You knew.
Whatever. It was like the 50 Cent shit. Whatever they say that nigga did it, he did it. Guilty as fuck. Like, it was literally like that. I was like, yo, you guys don't tell me it's Griff. Like, that's it. That's I don't even know anything about. But then I listened to it. And there's a few things there. It's, first of all, Griff has learned how to adjust his rhetoric. Because Griff used to come off angry. Now he comes off very calm. But his thing is always, I didn't say X, Y, Z about the Jewish people. I just point to what's in the books, and I'm just relaying what I was taught. And the book, it says it in the book right here. All of that shit is the same type of shit that supremacists and all of that say. And yeah, you're pointing to what's in books written by people with skewed points of view, right? So Nick is here quoting the fucking ISIS papers and talking about the Caucasus Mountains and melanin and all this other shit. And but one of the things that I think trips people up, like, Nick just went to Howard a few years ago. So he's going through what black people usually go through at, like, 20, with their friends, smoking weed and listening to rap albums.
They had just read the autobiography of Malcolm X.
They read Carter G. Woodson, Miseducation of Negroes.
Yeah.
And you just got on
Message to the Black Man from Elijah
Muhammad. Message to the Black Man. Yeah. And, you know, so y'all, usually you're going through this at, like, 20.
Got his frames on.
Yeah.
They didn't even prescription.
Got the turban on.
They didn't even prescription.
Y'all doing all this.
And I love Nick, by the way. I love Nick. I work with him at job. I love working with him at Jive. We got the same birthday. That's my.
But people usually go through this while they're young and in private, right? This nigga is doing this shit as a grown ass man and a superstar publicly. And that's 40. My thing. Like, you got to learn how to socialize these conversations. Nick has too many Jewish people close to him for this to have been a public dialogue he had before he had that conversation with them. So a couple of things that Griff says that I know that Nick was probably like, oh, wow. And the people were probably like, oh, wow. Like, Griff is like, black people can't be anti-Semitic because we're Semites. And this is why I know that Griff is full of shit. And I'm just also breaking this down for people who are listening, because it sounds like good logic. But it is true that the term Semite comes from people who speak Semitic languages. The Semitic languages are people of the Middle East and North Africa. So that includes Arabic, you know, it includes languages that we are descended from, right? That we are descended from the speakers of. However, the reason anti-Semitic refers to Jewish people is not because Jews started calling themselves that. It's because the Germans started using anti-Semitic to refer to to hate of Jewish people, because it sounded better than saying we don't fuck with Jewish people. Yeah. Right? So even if the technical definition of Semite and Semitic language could include people of the diaspora, right? We all know that the spirit of anti-Semitism, we know what it means. So to try to make an argument. But that's where, like, niggas get tripped up. Try to make an argument. Like, look up, you know, girls, like, look up Semite in the dictionary. Do this, do that. We understand what the spirit of the word means, right? So then, you know, so Nick's on that shit. He's on the whole, we're the original Israelites and the Jews want to be who we are. And then he starts spouting the rhetoric about, like, the 13 Jewish bloodlines that control everything, and the Rothschilds.
Oh, I didn't get that far.
All of those things, which black people be quick to repeat, by the way, are all rooted in Nazi propaganda from the war. That's how old they are. Like, there is literally anti-Jewish propaganda from World War II that depicts Rothschilds, you know. So it's like in the whole 13 bloodlines thing, and the whole and even something as simple, and I say this with the disclaimer that yes, relationships between black people and Jewish people, especially in a city like New York, and especially in sports and entertainment, they are complicated relationships. However, black people be quick to be like, well, you know, the Jews control everything, the Jews do everything, and even if in our mind, in our world, we are used to seeing Jews in positions of leadership, that phrasing is similar to being like, well, you know, blacks were made to work harder. They don't feel pain the same way. It's a similar kind of thing. Like, people might say, well, why would you be offended by that? That's a compliment. But it is anti That is anti-Jewish propaganda, and it is the exact kind of propaganda that was used to turn people against the Jews leading up to the Holocaust. So when you have that context, right, you understand. Like, I was watching shit, and I was just listing off shit that he said, because people were like, where was he anti-Semitic? And I was like, I saw about 4-5, you know what I mean, different times. Not to mention the part about, like, even if you want to talk about white people descending from the Caucasus Mountains or whatever, to actually repeat the language that, like, white people are the true savages and they're the animals and they're the whatever, how do you not feel like that's going to offend somebody? You know,
I mean?
I think
Nick got to a space where, obviously, where he didn't, at that moment or whatever,
he didn't give a fuck.
He didn't care who he was.
And my thing is, like, if you really didn't care, then fucking go for it. But no. He's so apologetic, and my understanding is legitimately remorseful.
Yeah,
no,
I think
like, nigga, what was you thinking?
But what I've peeped is he's definitely remorseful, definitely apologetic. But I feel like he's apologetic for the Jewish portions of the,
but
the
not the white portions. Possibly.
I don't think he's apologetic for. I haven't seen him be. But
it's been about the Jewish portions.
It's been about Jewish. And what I've discovered is over the years working in music for so long, and obviously working in the course of that, working with a lot of Jewish people, and being very close to, you know, a couple of people, you know, Barry Weiss and Janet Kleinbaum and some others were very close. Like, I've had the opportunity, and Nick did too, I guess he said take it. Like, I've had the opportunity to just ask questions.
And that's like, my thing.
I just ask questions. Like, and I think people sometimes think, like, if you ask a question, that means not Jewish people. I think other people might be like, well, if I ask this question, I want people to
if it's
going to be anti-Semitic. And I'm like, well, I don't look at it that way. I'm just asking the question. And if I am asking a question that's anti-Semitic, I would hope that they would tell me that.
Exactly.
And I've had these exchanges where they've asked me questions about black people and black culture too. And it ain't never been like, yo, what the fuck, son? It's like, you know, I didn't know that.
There has to be opportunity for exchange. And the reason I really want to hold our own feet to the fire on this, so some listeners who've been listening for a while may remember. So I went to Israel 4 years ago, and I went with a group of Jewish, white, and black people who were in entertainment. And it just so happened that there were a lot of black people on the trip, more than I expected there to be, which put me kind of in a level of comfort. But also because we went, like, leading up to the election, I want to say while we were over there, and I can't remember which, it's so sad, I can't even remember which two people were shot, but two men were, either one person was shot right before we left, and one once we got there, but there were protests in Charlotte when we got there. So, like, I'm in Israel watching, you know, a militarized police force on the streets.
Oh, I remember
Charlotte.
The Charlotte protests.
Which was bugged out. Yeah. So, we started, because of Black Lives Matter, and because the official organization had just come out as pro-Palestine, we were having a lot of conversations about the difference between the movement and the org and what Black Lives Matter really wants, and then start having conversations about the dynamics between Black people and Jewish people in entertainment, where Black people are usually the talent and the Jewish people are usually, like, the executives, which, even with that, I'll point out, part of the reason that started that way is because Jewish people would invest in Black talent when white people wouldn't. But that's a whole other conversation. And I went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem. And I have never considered myself, you know, I'm an open-minded person. I try to be an educated person. That also was not the first Holocaust Museum I'd ever been to. But seeing, the propaganda posters and reading about the propaganda leading up, seeing how they poisoned minds, what they said about the Jewish people, seeing actually how extensive the Holocaust was outside of what we hear about, and really getting a clear understanding of how much America was like, that's not really our problem. America
was
like,
they fell back for years.
Years. Really about us, so all of that, and then having conversations with the people I was with. Like, I remember one girl telling me, and she was younger than me, so this would have had to have been in, like, the late 80s, that she had classmates who couldn't play with her because she was Jewish. And I legit was like, I didn't think that shit was still happening in the 80s, right? And I realized that Black people do have an attitude of kind of like, the Jews are too powerful to be threatened. But it was the perception of the Jews being so powerful that put them in danger in the first place, right? Yeah, yeah. And so I had to shift my thinking on that. And also, like, just like we say to people all the time, Jim Crow wasn't really that long ago. Israel was founded in 1948. My mom was born in 1949. Mm-hmm. So there's something about, like, when you're standing in those streets, right? When you're on the land and really thinking about time and how that really wasn't that long ago,
I mean, a lot of those people are still alive.
Yeah, a lot of those people, which is another difference. Like, you know, people, grandparents who are alive.
If those people aren't alive, it's like one generation removed. Like, it's like they're alive, but their children are definitely still alive.
So I was fortunate and able to have a dialogue with Jewish people without it becoming the oppression Olympics, you know? And
But you know what, though? What I find, and not to cut you off, but what I find, again, I'm going by my very limited experience, right. But what I find is when I have been able to have conversations with Jewish people about things, it's never like that. It's always very what's the word I'm looking for? It's I don't know if friendly. I don't know if that's the right term, but like it's respectful. It's never like, nah, we suffered more than you when you. It's always just like,
I think there has to be relationship there.
Yeah,
and I have to imagine that Nick's business partner, who is Jewish,
and he had a rabbi come on the show.
Yeah, I just have to imagine that. Like, if I'm Nick's business partner and I'm watching this as a Jewish person, it's kind of like if you're a Black person and a white person you know is wilding out, and then they say some shit like, "Oh, but not you though," like some shit like that. You know, you're like,
you're different.
Why would you not talk to me first, right? Yeah. So I mean, but that's the problem. Like Black people, if we inherently understand that we need to do our own research and our own education about our history rather than accept sources that come from other people, why would you not understand that's the same case for other historically persecuted communities? Like, if you're saying, I know that the white man doesn't teach me Black history properly, so I'm gonna study my own, but I'm also gonna accept our own version of this Jewish history rather than go study some Jewish, like, we need to educate ourselves the same way we demand people educate themselves about us, right? That's my thought, anyway.
What do you think, bro?
I mean, I think you guys have said it all. There's not really much for me to add in this. I think, you know, I watched the video. I hit you guys.
Yeah,
because you were like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, really not. There was no real wiggle room here. And you know, again, I kind of felt like what Nas said earlier, which is that, you know, Nick is going through this phase at a time in his life when most of us go through this awakening and enlightening period.
Yeah, 21,
young, and not really, you know, under the hot lights.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's apologized from. And by all accounts, he seems to be legitimately sorry. There were some rumors and speculation about him feeling very depressed and really kind of, you know, on a, you know, I don't want to use the S word, but like,
yeah, but he was in a dark space.
Yeah, he was in a very dark space, and hurting himself would not have been out of the question as per his reports allegedly. But, you know, look, I wish him well. I don't want to see him, like, lose everything. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, Nick has a lot of credit in the bank. Yeah. You know, he's got a 25-year history of having done good business, being a good partner, upholding a lot of different things. So I think it was in some folks' best interest for them to, you know, foster conversation and foster some way for him to have a I don't want to say platform, but for him to have the opportunity to have these discussions and not just simply do away with them.
And it shows how much good credit he has, because he still has the Masked Singer show. Like, they didn't.
Yeah, well, Fox apparently was like, You need to have some conversations real quick and apologize, which is fair. I believe Nick is sincere in his apology. I do. Yeah. And that is another thing. Like, as wrong as he was, we have to not only be A, willing to tell people they're wrong when they're wrong without, like, telling somebody they're wrong is not canceling them, first of all. Like, yeah. Saying that somebody is wrong, criticizing somebody is not canceling. So that's A. B, we need to also at some point allow for a genuine apology, or at least give it a minute to see if it looks like it's real, right?
Well, so, it shows the difference is this time, and why I think he's able to do this is because he didn't offend Black people. Mm-hmm. So the air quotes, like Bro always says, the air quotes canceling wasn't going to come from us. It was going to come from the Jewish community who seems to have decided to have conversations with him, educate him, and, you know, bring him kind of back around. Your point is absolutely correct, because that's what we always do. Right. Like one little thing, and the Black community is like, you canceled. It's like, nigga, I put hot sauce on my fish. You take my card away, and it's just done.
But also the Black community, I mean, and I'm not even just talking about Black people, the cancel culture, like, I've always said that I hate the idea of cancel culture, not of accountability. I believe there needs to be accountability, and sometimes there needs to be a reckoning, right? You perform actions have consequences. I mm-hmm. believe in accountability. I do not believe that every situation calls for that motherfucker's canceled, pull their this, do their that. And also, the more people shout it, the less people actually do it. Yeah, that's the other thing, right? So it has become very performative. And even when people were like, we gonna boycott Viacom. First of all, y'all don't watch it, but BET, and y'all only watch it for the BET this Awards.
BET has so many, like, properties underneath that umbrella.
No way.
What exactly are you boycotting? And also, like, for what though? Because Viacom was well within their rights to be like, we need to part ways with you. Like, well within their rights. I would have actually been surprised if they didn't. They have, people have, like, these companies have boards. You know what I mean? They have, like,
Niggas ain't canceling shit.
Nobody's making anything.
Man, fuck
but,
these niggas, man.
So wait, but on the same level of performative wokeness, did you put Talib on the list?
I didn't, actually, because we had discussed it last week, and I had no idea that it would keep going. But
this
fucking
nigga is still.
Well, this dude, this, like,
that is this, wild.
This dude, and I haven't been following the story as closely as you have, but obviously, this guy has. I have to, you know, my armchair analysis. This guy obviously has some deep rooted issues, because just the energy that it takes to keep this going for this long.
Oh my
like,
god,
bro! Like, aren't you just bored with it now? Like, aren't you it just takes- bored with it?
No, because now his pride is in the way. Like, y'all, for those who've never got, like, I've gotten in Twitter back and forth before, and it literally, it's like, I'm sure a lot of you have gotten in a text argument before, just a heated text discussion. It kind of freezes you to your spot, right? Like, you can't really, you typing off fast and you responding and stuff. You can't, like, it sucks time. And the fact that he's been doing this for, like, 14 days,
that's what I'm saying.
Insane. I've been following
his last tweet to her is literally 15 minutes ago.
Like, he's still going.
And the thing is, like, he's so this is what's really, really insidious about it. Aside from the fact just that he, like you said, he's expelling this much time on it. What is really problematic is that there's a formula to how he does this. So for one thing, she's had him blocked since at least last
week. Yeah, you were saying it last week, so she kind of goes around that.
So, and part of the way he does it is, if you look at the recent tweets that he has her tagged in, the quote retweets that he has her tagged in, the tweets won't have anything to do with her. So let's say somebody's having an argument with Talib right now about some whole other shit, right? His go-to response to everybody for the past few days has been, whether they're Black or white, you're a Nazi, you're a white supremacist, whatever. So he'll quote retweet something to somebody that has nothing to do with her, nothing to do with the conversation, nothing to do with anything. And call him a white supremacist, call him a Nazi, call him whatever, and add her at into the reply. So now anybody who's replying to him, that reply is going to her. So even though she has him blocked, anybody else who's responding to his tweet
is hitting her.
it's so hitting hard. So it's still harassment.
Let me ask you a question, because you would know this better than me, definitely. Like,
how come Twitter hasn't suspended?
Yeah, how come they haven't stopped this shit?
So I actually last, like,
I know a lot of people have done a lot of, you know,
reporting. A lot of reporting. The thing is, so there's a couple of accounts that follow him. One in particular that literally this bitch pops up with a new account like every day because she gets suspended every day. And apparently she's done this with people that he argues with all the time.
Is this the Mary chick?
The Mary chick, yeah. And some have pulled out evidence that is sanctioned by him. Some people think it is him. I don't think it is him because that's way too much energy. I don't doubt that he has some other accounts he's on though. Mm. But this person, like, literally all she ever does is create accounts just to argue on his behalf and post his shit. She's and her IP is from the Netherlands. But so there's that, and she literally doxed homegirl's family. So she's been getting suspended every time she pops up. Talib himself, though, Twitter's been watching this whole time. He technically is not breaking any. He technically has not committed any Twitter violations yet. Like, they don't have. Like, targeted harassment, he should be able to get suspended for targeted harassment, but they don't have any definition of targeted harassment that falls under, I just tweeted you a bajillion times. They should, because if somebody called my phone as many times as Talib has tweeted her, I would probably be able to get an order of protection. You know what I mean? Like, just over 2 weeks, you call my phone all day, every day.
Yeah.
So, but I know that they're watching. I know the way
they gotta be watching by now.
But the other thing is that Talib has been on the other side of this, which I found out because he got doxxed several years ago and was being harassed. And a friend connected him with someone who was at Twitter at the time. So he knows very clearly what's within and what's without the rules. So he never calls her out her name. He never calls her a
bitch. He knows how to dance.
He never threatens her. Like, he doesn't retweet the doxing. You know, he's being very, because even if he retweeted it, that could call. He's being very careful. But that also is very calculated and insidious, like I said. And at this point, it seems like he is just determined to die on his heel. He has said that he's not going to stop until she either apologizes or deletes her account. But what's amazing to me is, like, that's always his thing. But what's amazing to me is, like, nigga, like, you started all this shit over somebody who ain't say nothing to you. Like, I can't.
Was literally not even talking about you.
Like, not talking about, but your weirdo ass searches your name.
I wonder what, I mean, obviously, maybe this, I don't want to speak on right. that because I know what's going on, but, like, What's happening at the crib? Like, how is his wife not nigga?
I feel like his wife is still. I told y'all this last week.
She's happy that the heat ain't on her.
Yeah.
Are they even still together though?
I don't know. I heard there's another baby. Like, I'm trying not to get into all the mess. Not to get mired in the messy because that detracts from, like, the actual real. And I know what, you know, Sean said last week that Maya, that's the girl's name, has. You know, poked her head up time and time again as well. But she's, first of all, Maya's young. She didn't have that many followers to begin with. She might have more now. But I've been on the side of, like, a Twitter attack lightweight before a couple times. And I mean, like, lightweight. Like, maybe it lasts, like, 8 hours or something like that. That shit is over-fucking-whelming. It's overwhelming. And it's like, you don't want to open your account, but you also have to open your account, and you try to tweet through it, but you can't tweet through it, and your instincts tell you to fight back. So, like, Bossip did a story on it this week. Before they did the story, like, she put out, like, a statement. Her account is that basically explained what happened and why, you know, she's not going to be quiet, why she's not going to be bullied. Her account has been locked. But I do think that this isn't going to go the way Talib thinks it's going to go because, like, I've never seen this many people talking about him. There's a bunch of people who are always like, this is what this nigga does. But this is somewhere way beyond excessive. Like, it's actually frightening to watch. It's scary. Like, I'm scared. I would be terrified if I was her.
Because he don't stop. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, and I would be terrified if I was her because his people have no boundaries. And nobody, no man from hip-hop, and listen, somebody may have called him, like, directly to try to check him, but at this point, 2+ weeks of public behavior, in my opinion, requires a public condemnation.
And yeah, like, nigga, what is he doing?
It's clear that Talib doesn't respect women, right? So it's like the fact that none of his brothers in the game have even just said without him, like, this nigga done lost his mind, or some variation of,
yeah, you bugged.
What he's doing is wrong.
Yeah.
That is also disheartening. Yeah. That's disheartening to me.
All right. So I want to end the show with your man, Kanye. Because he's just
spiraling.
Yes, past 3 days. Now I'm gonna have a little rant. Dude, I'm gonna pass it to you, bro, after this, Inca, but like, or Nye, whatever, whoever wants to jump in. But my rant is this: I know that the man has bipolar disorder. I don't know a lot about bipolar disorder. God bless, I don't have it. And so I might be speaking out of turn here, but what really just kind of bugs me out about this thing with him is I think people are like using the bipolar disorder for everything. So they're like, oh, he's got bipolar disorder. He always does this. And, you know, if he goes, you know, if he does this and takes his meds, whatever, like he, you know, he'll be cool. I'm like, yo, he's been on this kind of like, you know, looking down on black people, like white man's ice cold or shit for like several years now. Even this pop up doing this because he's going through a going through a manic state. This is who he's been telling us for several years now. This is who he is. Maybe he didn't start that way, but this is who he is. So I hate that people kind of say, well, you know, if he could kind of get himself under control, then he'll kind of go back to the old Kanye. The old Kanye is gone. That guy does not care about that shit no more.
Well, also, Kanye's been on these cycles publicly for over a decade. Privately, I think Kanye was diagnosed like 13 years ago or something like that. But yeah. But think about it. The Taylor Swift shit was 2009.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's been a long time ago. And several other things have happened since then. And people now are blaming the Kardashians, who definitely have a lot of shit with them. Like, ain't nobody here, you know, caping for the Kardashians. But you cannot blame them for his behavior. And you can't blame him for his thoughts.
Or Donda.
Donda, God bless her soul. You can't blame them because he said that Harriet Tubman, you know, basically fuck niggas over. And he said, you know, Donald Trump is like his father. Like, he said these things. And I love Anna Wintour and, you know, I only talk to billionaires. And, like, he says these things all the time. You know, slavery was a choice. Like, this has nothing to do with anybody, but these are his thoughts. And I don't think that these thoughts, again, I'm talking shit because I'm not a doctor, but I don't think these thoughts are based on manic. I think this is what he's come up with his own philosophies. And this is how he feels.
We know mania does not change your core beliefs.
Exactly.
Yeah, it might just change how you express them.
Exactly. And then, so I thought it was funny, you know, seeing him. I find it funny how now that, you know, he tweeted all these tweets last night about, you know, Kim and Chris and what they you know, allegedly ever trying to do to him. Now he's saying white supremacy. It's like, bro, what? You went to the White House and hugged the king white supremacist and said he was your father. And but now because it happened, like the great poet laureate CeeLo Green said, thinking it can't happen to you, and then it do. But now it's happening to you. Now we're supposed to, the black people, get together and ride the train. Fuck out of here, man.
This is the part where I think that, well, you know, for one, I've been saying we need to stop giving Kanye attention. Like,
that's not realistic.
I understand that it's not realistic. So let me phrase it this way. If not give him attention, I need outlets to stop dissecting what he's saying as though there's logic in it, because there's not. There is no logic in what he's doing right now. We recognize when Kanye is in the middle of a break. It's a cycle. We've seen it.
The thing is, Nada, when he does go into these manic states and he is on a break, like you said, that's when all the, that's the best fodder for the clicks and the likes.
So true, but for not, you, but to analyze it as though there may be anything real to it, aside from reporting, like, aside from reporting it as, this is disturbing because Kanye was saying this, actually reporting it and taking it out of, like, kind of like what motherfuckers do with Trump. Like, we know this.
No, I was just about to say, it's what we do in, it's what we do in society of today, this is what we do.
Right. But it's still a, it's still a problem.
It's wrong. It's wrong. Right,
it's wrong.
It's but, also but so dangerous.
It's dangerous, right. So that said, this might sound fucking morbid. I told the guys this already, and I had this conversation with a couple other friends. Understand that Kanye is an actual crisis, right? So Jeff is right. This is not just, oh, and I said weeks ago, I said, I believe he's off his meds, which I do. He's,
yeah, you did.
Again. Mm-hmm. But this is even beyond that. Every time Kanye goes through one of these spirals, it gets more extreme, right? And at this point, you know, he's in Wyoming. It doesn't seem like his family's with him. He definitely has enablers around him.
Yeah, but his homeboys went out there yesterday or whatever.
He definitely has enablers around him. But also, he's a grown-ass man. And imagine the, when people are like, why can't Kim and him get him help? Like, her options are what, to have him committed against his will and declared a danger to himself? That is a career-changing decision.
Yeah, right? but to that point, that in one of some of the tweets that he did last night, he said
she was trying to do that.
That's what they were. Her and Chris were trying to go out there and get him come with a doctor to see him, and he of course I guess it didn't work out. So even the thing that people are suggesting that Kim do as a air quotes to piece the bra again, as a good wife. He's not accepting.
Like, and because Kanye is, because again, healthy Kanye is very stubborn, and healthy Kanye is very self-centered, right? So then the other thing is, I was speaking to a friend of mine who actually is bipolar or has been diagnosed with bipolar personality disorder, and she was saying that to her, Kanye's behavior, It's suicidal in a sense, because I started feeling a couple of days ago like the only celebrities I can think of that were on these kind of spirals, these kind of cycles for this long, it was only a matter of time before the news was like such and such is gone. And as morbid as that sounds, there's only two ways Kanye can go right now, either institutionalization or, unfortunately, he's out here. And this can be a form of like rejecting help, pushing people away, spiraling. In some cases, sometimes it is a form of a suicide ideation, you know? I'm not saying that is what it is with him. I'm saying sometimes that is what it can be. And I just think that as fans, right, or as consumers or as observers from a distance, this shit is so far beyond public discourse at this point, right? Like, this is some real, like, we are watching a man break in real time.
What do you think, bro?
Real time.
What do you think about all this stuff? And you actually, because I forgot to talk about it, if you want to, you could speak about the quote-unquote rally, if you wanted to mention that as well.
Rally. We've talked about Kanye, and I got nothing. Right?
You're exhausted.
I have nothing, and I think that there can be two things true at once. I think you can be a person suffering from bipolar and be an unrelenting asshole and be the same person.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they don't have to be always tied to one another. And I think that there's, you know, the fact that he, you know, does realistically suffer from this disease, I guess you can call it a disease or illness.
Personality disorder.
It operates as a catch-all for his fans and for people to be empathetic and sort of sympathetic.
Exactly.
And I think that has been used enough, right? Like, to me and for me, there's a certain amount of energy that I have for entertainment shit,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's capped with Kanye, right? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
there's
yeah,
no more.
Yeah. Ain't no more room,
nothing,
bro.
Nothing he's doing is surprising, right? That's why I was saying there's always this performative and like this young lady who goes to this rally,
mm-hmm.
if you call it that, it's about 100 people. He has a complete and total meltdown. He screams at this lady. He, you know, behaves at this young woman in a very erratic way.
Especially
which,
when
which is even crazy when it's juxtaposed to his embracement
yep.
of this white woman who's basically mm-hmm. kind of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say to the people who are at this rally, you know, it's not lost on me that you're also trying to be a part of the story, right?
Like, right.
You can't have it both ways. Either you're a supporter of what he is doing, or you're making an attempt to become centered in this story and really sort of use his meltdown and use this anti-Kanye rhetoric sort of, you know, to your benefit. And
yeah, that's get your followers up.
Yes, and that's what it felt like this young woman was doing. I don't want to dismiss the fact that she was berated in public particularly by a black man in front of other people. I don't want to be dismissive of that, but I do want to have, like, I feel like at some point we got to have some level of acknowledgement here and some level of accountability, even with some of the people that are going into, you know, Talib's timeline. Like, a part of this, a part of why it continues to go is for the people who are trying to latch on to seem like they're being helpful in this situation to defend this woman, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is clear that this motherfucker is not stopping.
Right.
That the tactic that you're using is not stopping. It's clear that trying to talk in a sort of regular way to Kanye is not working. So mm-hmm. all of this other shit that you guys are doing, it's all self-serving, in my opinion. Okay, the moment you know when the class clown stops fucking acting like the class clown, okay? When nobody's laughing.
Yeah, when niggas stop right. laughing.
When niggas stop laughing,
yeah.
Niggas start looking mm-hmm. at you crazy, and nobody wants to fucking invite you to the party, and nobody wants to fucking hang around you because you're an yeah. asshole, okay? That's when that shit will start to change. And until yeah. then, all of this is performative social media shit to get engagement, to get... There's a very weird, and I'm no sociologist or psychologist, but I'm sure that there are going to be studies about people who are absolutely enthralled with engagement on social media, and they will go to any lengths, even if it's to some level self-harm, mm-hmm. to get that level of engagement.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that young woman's thoughts were. To think that she was going to go to that rally and she was going to be the one that was going to turn this nigga around.
Right.
yeah.
What?
Yeah, man.
The first person to say
he was going to be like, yo, I never thought about it like that.
I never really realized that. I'm going to take this shit off and stop being an asshole right now.
Yeah.
It is what it is with him. I mean, I don't want to see he has a family. Clearly he has people that love him. You know, I understand that the Kardashians, and I say that because I don't like saying that term in this particular sense because Kim is her own woman and that she is a wife here and she's a mother, but they cannot escape the fact that as a family, they are not sympathetic people.
No.
They will not have people be sympathetic to them, even when everything points to you should probably be sympathetic to this woman.
Right.
Yeah. Sympathetic, maybe is the wrong word. Empathetic.
I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And her and what is going on, because I am 100% positive that there's a lot of management in that house that has to take place, and she is carrying the brunt of that.
Yeah, and also North is old enough to know what the fuck is going on. Yeah. There's also that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you kind of have to deal with that. You kind of have to manage that. And I, you know, look, I don't envy that one bit as someone with a spouse that is somewhat recognizable. I can mm-hmm. understand, which is not nearly some shit that they going through, but I can totally understand how those hot lights can just be a little overwhelming. I would hope that she's, you know, she released a statement today in which she said all of the right things that you would think that you would want your wife to say in this time. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. You know, to be honest with you, neither one of them need each other in terms of some sort of celebrity shit.
Yeah, no, not at all.
You know, if they got divorced, that's not stopping the machine.
It actually on either side.
Not at all.
It actually might turn the machine up even higher. Because that story will run and generate, you know. Inka, you got anything to say about this before we shut it down?
Just as a person who hates to be put in the position to feel sorry for either one of them, I feel for Kim right now, because there, even though she put out like a beautifully thoughtful statement that kind of covered all bases, there is nothing that you can say. Like, she can't even have the space to be angry right now that he put all of her business out in the street.
Yeah, about
like,
the abortion thing.
My husband told somebody I was holding Plan B pills over a toilet, we would not be together today. Like, in what world?
That violation is bonkers.
Or also, like that he said himself, he basically said he didn't want North, which also is fucked up, because if you guys remember when Kim was pregnant, y'all remember how many jokes we had about how miserable Kanye looked when Kim was pregnant?
Yeah.
Like, and how hard it was on her. Like, she almost didn't make it through having that baby.
Exactly. Like, it's just all kinds of fucked up. And of course, now also, if she takes the option to actually at this point protect her children and leave Kanye.
Yeah,
I saw an asshole, right?
Us Weekly put out, I've learned that Us Weekly or People or one of those put it out, it's coming directly from the Kardashian camp, said that Kim has been in discussion with divorce lawyers. So I don't know if
that means that. I feel like that's been on the back burner forever. Yeah.
I feel like that's probably been going on for some years.
Go ahead, bro.
If I'm not mistaken, this was something that came around a couple years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, right at the time when they did the clothing line, and the clothing line pretty much tanked.
Oh, I forgot.
And there was, and then it was like he had all of his debt, and he was basically, you know, blowing through capital, and then they kind of, you know, had a good 2-year run, I guess, where apparently he, you know, made the bread back and things were kind of good, but there was a lot of pressure during that particular time.
Yeah.
This was kind of like right around that time when he initially, I believe, allegedly stopped taking the medication and stopped, you know, taking care of himself in that way. And then it just began to spiral. And then I think they had the kid and it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was just, I mean, look, man, there is never a right time in marriage. And this is why I always say, I'm always weirded out when I see people who's like, yeah, we were married for 18 months and we got divorced. I'm like, nigga, did y'all start fighting at like month 3? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, the process to get divorced, what happened? She
fucked up the chicken that night you divorced.
It's not an easy thing. Like,
yeah, like that's not overnight. That's not shit for you. Like, that has to be brewing.
I wanted wings and she gave me fried chicken. I divorced her. Like, nigga, what?
She didn't take it out the freezer on Thursday.
Didn't get my shit out the cleaners, man. Fuck that. I'm out of here.
So I just think that, you know, this is something that, look, Kim is, again, people don't necessarily like her. Kim is a young woman, okay? Yep. I'm sure she still wants to be dealt with like a woman. She's not, you know, just a mother of a herd. She wants to have her husband, you know, compliment her. And,
they really have four kids. I always forget that. They have four children under seven.
Yeah, four young-ass kids.
Yeah, that's like, insane. Yeah.
Like, they got a man.
They did not do the black people shit, because you know, one, you gotta have a kid, and then that kid.
You gotta have a kid who can babysit the other kid.
You see, Ivy has no siblings.
Oldest kid be 31, and your youngest be 9. Like, what the fuck? I just say one thing about the Kanye thing. There's a very good interview with his one used to be his close friend. I think they're getting closer again. GLC, who used to rap with him as well, on Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay's show, and he kind of is current. He just did it like a day or two ago, and he talks all about, you know, how they met and that, you know, so, and he doesn't cape. Like, he's like, yeah, nah, he was bugging with that shit. Like, he's not on some, like, no, just leave him alone. Like, he keeps it really gully. But he slipped out something that I don't think he even realized what he said. He said, Kanye lives in Wyoming on the ranch, and Kim lives in L.A. So they don't even live together because they were asking, Van asked him something about, like, how was it being around the Kardashians and with him? And like, how did they interact? And he said, I've never really met them. I've met them maybe once in passing because Kanye don't live with them. He lived in Wyoming.
And so also Kanye being in greater isolation also just allows him to...
to do whatever he does. Yeah. So that's also probably weighing on Kim too. She's like, again, it's not the same as, you know, Darsha from the projects, but bottom line is this woman has four young children that she has to carry, care for, and he ain't around. And that's, again, it's not the same. She has money, she has nannies, just get it. But still, it's the pressure of raising a family without the man who you made the family with being around. He's like, you know, 2,000 miles away, you know, making records or doing whatever else he's doing. So I'm sure that doesn't help their situation. And even he's even in his tweets, that's why he's like, Kim, I'm in Cody. Y'all coming out here?
Yeah.
Like,
he's like, I'm at the ranch. Come get me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're not even home, bro. Like, you come get me, nigga. That's a private jet. Again, they can afford all that, but like, don't act like I'm around the corner. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know, man. I don't know where this is going to go. Anything else before we wrap it up?
Nope.
Just want to send love and shouts out to Tamar.
Oh, yes.
For whatever she is going through. I can't imagine.
Yeah. God bless her and her family. And keep an eye on your man in the White House, because he's like, he getting dirtier and dirtier with these tricks.
Oh, absolutely. The covert ops feds team.
The covert ops team. That's about
sending motherfuckers in Chicago.
Covert ops teams went at the mom. You know, there's moms in Portland who are like, white moms. They went out there with tear gas and batons, which is crazy because they're obviously very unarmed and not threatening at all. I found it very interesting, my conspiracy self, that Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago, like, went back at him like, yo, man, like, I'm not having it. You're not coming here with this bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, there's a huge shooting at a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, let's not know. Chicago cats get down, right?
But like, also, nobody died. 14 people hit, nobody dead.
Yeah, I'm not putting that past sliding somebody in there to cause chaos in the woman's city.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
The pushback. We see Brian Kemp, what he's doing to Keisha Bottoms, trying to sue her so she can't even talk. There's a lot of dirty
and suing her personally, not suing the city of Atlanta.
Yes.
Suing Keisha personally when there are four other Georgia cities who are also requiring masks, and he ain't
even thinking about it. And,
well, she said she was on the Joy's new show that she was
the readout.
Going to do the countersuit.
Yeah, she should.
And then we see
the biggest thing what happened a couple of days ago, where somebody went to a judge's house
and tried to murk her.
Yo,
and
that
killed her son. Killed her son and shot her husband.
It's full wag. And meanwhile, he had his most coherent press conference about COVID ever. But I think they're related. I think it's more like you need to show a public, you know,
kind of
public demeanor while we cause all this chaos.
While we dirty, exactly. You can't be dirty on the podium while we being dirty in these streets.
Yeah, we need you to look like a human so we can do this again.
And so that people will be like, we need his leadership.
Exactly.
In the midst of the chaos.
And we're going to keep an eye on what's her name? Jelazine Maxwell? Because this...
Jelan?
Is
that how you say it?
Yeah, Epstein's wife.
That's how I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep an eye on her.
Trump gave a shout-out to, which is like...
Yeah, see if she makes the cut. So,
yeah.
Just wanted to say that. So, y'all stay safe in these streets.
All right. Sean, you're about to say something. Were you about to say something?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. You good? All right, guys.
All right.
Bro, I'm going to send Malcolm out there to pick up my painting.
All right. Let me know.
I'll let you know. Y'all be safe.
Thank you, Inka.
Thank you for having me again.
All right,
guys, later.
All right, we'll talk to y'all soon.
All right, bye. And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.